now that the world is opening up, travel. I had a dream about, was it many years ago? I spoke a bunch of times. I spoke at a place called the Porcupine Freedom Festival in New Hampshire, Rogers Campground, if I remember rightly. And I had a dream that I was back there. So I could be emerging from the lair of, I've been a studio band for the last couple of years, I guess like most musicians of reason. And looks like I might be back out on the road, baby. Back out. Dans la. I don't know. What's the French for road again? Voyage. Dans la voyage. See, as soon as you go French, you have to growl. It's just a fact of life. Well, hello and welcome to my rumble. Rumble in the jungle. A rumble in my stomach after too much chicken masala. But yeah, good afternoon. So if you want to type your questions in, then hey. All right, let's just do questions. I've got some topics, happy to talk. But if you've got questions, man, I've got babblage. It's really all I've got, babblage. If women won't treat men nice until there are food shortages, how do we convince Bill Gates to destroy food processing plants faster? Yeah, well, so I have a book. Yes, I have a book. Now, if you haven't read this book, it's really cool. It's called The Present. I will give you the feed right here in the chat. And you should really check out this book. It's my new book. It's a love story, a very interesting and unusual love story set in the men's rights movement and the collapse of modern civilization. So I think you'll find it very interesting, very gripping. It's totally free because I am a donation-based life form. But it's called The Present. So I wrote a book a year and a half ago called The Future, which is about the world in 500 years when we've achieved a stateless society, peaceful parenting is the norm, and all kinds of beautiful things are happening. And so you can check that out at freedomain.locals.com, and you can use the promo code all caps UPB2022. For a free preview of this, a really great community. We do premium live streams, my whole History of Philosophy series on there. Is there an ebook for The Present, Steph? Yeah, I'll put that out later today. I finally finished it up. I'll put that out today. All right. So tell me, other than me, your slutty fishnet philosopher down at the no-tell motel, do you have a guilty secret? Like, what is your guilty secret? What is your, like, I guess it's not much of a secret if you talk about it here, but okay, you guys have pseudonyms. What is your guilty secret, my friends? There's a podcast. I don't know if it's a podcast. It's a show called Whatever. And I will say, I haven't watched I watched the little snippets that they post, and they are pretty wild. Wild. And the patriarchy, toxic masculinity, it's great. It's really, really great. All right, let's get to your comments here. The serious ones. Hey, Steph, how do you show women you're a good provider, have lots of money without bragging or coming off as an ass? That's a good question. Look, a woman wants to appear attractive to show that she takes care of herself, has good self-esteem, good hygiene, she's willing to defer gratification, which means she's intelligent, which means she's not overweight. She exercises, which means she's willing to do things that are uncomfortable in the here and now in order to gain benefits down the road. Lots of great good stuff going on for women. Women want to appear attractive, but they don't want to appear slutty. Appealing without being a big laser disco lighthouse STD broadcasting system, right? So this is how do you show a man that you're attractive without showing so much skin that you're going to attract K-selected sociopaths, right? It's a tough call. So the way as a man that you show that you're a good resource provider, now maybe you have money, maybe you don't, you dress well, but not flashy. You have a nice car, but not some penis-enhancing insecurity, it's cold outside, excuse my nudist colony, Shrinkage Bugatti, right? So you show that you're a good provider by dressing well, having a nice haircut, having good teeth. You know, if you need to do teeth whitening, if you need to get your teeth polished, I think that's all kinds of fine. Talk to your dentist, of course. Have reasonable levels of exercise. To me, it's all a medium, right? The people on the extremes are asking for trouble and usually will be giving you trouble, right? So a woman who takes no care of her appearance is really depressed, you know, and a man who just flashes his abs, you know, this is the situation, you know, lifts up his shirt, shows his abs all the time, or is flashing his money, has those $1 million Conor McGregor watches or whatever. That's just insecurity and braggadocio and so on. In the same way that people who are, I'm a pear, you're sort of pudgy and shaped like a question mark and so on. That's one extreme. The other extreme is, you know, the guy who can't scratch his back because he's just all hyped up on roid-driven rage muscles. That's not good either. So you want some stuff in the middle. So if you aim for the... Now, you don't want the median in virtue, right? Aristotelian mean, not too much, not too little, applies to extremes of pathology. It doesn't apply, like, you can't have too much virtue. No. Actually, I can... No, I'm going to qualify that. Even if I say it, I can see the bridge crumbling under me as I forge across the canyon of what's my next thought. Yeah, you can have too much virtue. Just ask Socrates or Jesus, at least for survivability's sake, you can absolutely have too much virtue. So yeah, you show you're a good provider. You dress well, but not ridiculously flashy. You have a nice car. If you have a car, not ridiculously flashy. And you have a nice watch, but not ridiculously flashy, and so on, right? So... In the same way, if you're a woman, you don't want to go around in a burqa, but you also don't want to go around in these camel toe shorts where, you know, there's these girls out with shorts now. Literally, you can see the curve of the butt cheek underneath the shorts. It's wild tsunami drop cleavage in the back. So, all right. Now, you want people to meet you without the flash. Right, so I mean, there's a kind of conscious reason why I just have a backdrop, I have a mic, I have me, right? And you want people to meet you without distractions. Now, if you're real slovenly and, you know, neck bearded and you got pimples that you can't, like maybe you could do something about them and your teeth are kind of weird and yellow and all of that, then people find that distracting. And you want to have a neutral appearance. I mean, I know that I don't understand. I look around in this world and I just, oh no, I'm going to hold. Should I hold back the rant? Should I? I don't know, man. Should I hold back the rant? I can't tell. Hit me with a Y if you want me to do the rant. Oh, Lord. Oh, I can't. I don't think I'll be able to stop it. R for rant. You're enabling me. You're just enabling me. All right. All right. It's a standing rant, but I'm not. I'll leave my shirt on for now. All right. So you see all these people. You see all these people in the world, right? You're going around in the world. And don't you want to just say to them, I want to say to them, I kind of want to grab them by the giant black hoop earrings. I want to take a big magnet and, in a sense, gently ease all of the weird face piercings out of their face, and I just want to yell at them, and I just want to scream, just look normal! Just look normal! Just look normal! So we can have a conversation without me being distracted by the whistling sound that goes through all the piercings you have in your face like you mashed a tackle box to your face and threw yourself down a flight of stairs! Just look normal! Like the people who are really chunky, really fat, right? Gosh, you know, it's kind of distracting. I don't know where to look. Now, people who are super skinny, the people who are super muscular, the people with wild tattoos, they're like just, you know, with tongue piercings so that if they, you know, they go on a trampoline, you hear a buddy, you're a boy, make a big, no, so you just hear that, you just, the thumping sound when they go around, like, just look vaguely normal. This is my plea to you. Just my basic plea, just look normal so we can have a conversation without me being distracted by the eye-poking, wind-whistling, tackle box in the face sounds and sights of your terrible childhood that you have not processed. That's all. That's all I'm asking. Just don't look like a freak. Just look normal, and also don't look like a stereotype, right? Don't look like a stereotype. Like, when I meet somebody who is a walking stereotype, my eyes roll back and forth like casino slot lemons. Like, it's just like, what are you going to say? You know, the guys who are just like really kind of cool and they just kind of like a weed culture and, you know, they just laid back and, you know that there's a lot of passive aggressive landmines in there if you ever poke anything around this supposedly laid back persona. Or, you know, the women with the blue hair and the nose studs and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, it's NPC broadcasting system. Welcome to NPC. Every single opinion is pre-programmed into me, and it's a stimulus response system that AI is going to vastly outstrip in about, oh no, actually it did it in about 1980. Input, output. You just know. You see someone with this really boring look that is just like everybody else who's exactly the same, and you just know. It's like NPC land. Nothing original is going to come out of them. They'll never think for themselves, and they just clutter up the arteries of the social discourse to the point where people have strongs and you have to call a bondulance. So, yes, it is pretty wild. Just look normal. Look normal so I'm not distracted, because it's a form of aggression to look weird, right? It's a form of aggression because what you do is you're forcing people, in a sense, to not comment on how weird you look. Just look normal. Have a reasonable haircut and just, I don't know, what is, help me understand this, my friends. Help me understand. What is wrong with just looking normal? Why is it so upsetting to people? Why is it so, like, why can't they do it? Is it broadcasting to other crazy people? Is it NPC subsonar beluga forehead calls to other people to merge up and create a thoughtless mob of pitchforks and torches? I don't know. What is it? Why? Why can't? Well, what's wrong with just looking normal? I don't want to see the insides of your nostrils. I don't want to see holes in your ears the size that you could pass World War II torpedoes through, aiming back in time 20 years to the Lusitania. Like, I don't want to see that stuff. You already have a hole around your tongue called your mouth. I don't really want to see a hole in your tongue. You don't need a straw holder. They're called lips, not... I don't know. It's just bizarre. All right. Your podcast really helped me get through divorce back in 2014. Fan ever since. Or fab ever since. Maybe that's a typo. Maybe that's right. All, please click like on the stream to help the algorithm. Yes, and if you could share the stream, that would be excellent. Can you give a brief outlook of what society looks like after AI takes... most of the current jobs. Well, yes, well. I don't like to make predictions because I believe in free will. And I also believe that I have, and you have, and we all have, some capacity to influence the world around us. So I don't like to make predictions because predictions, you know, if a rock is falling down the side of a cliff, you may not know exactly where it lands, but you know it ain't going to go sideways or up. Or turn into a flamingo when it hits the ground. So you can make rough predictions based upon inanimate objects. And I guess the more information you have, the more accurate your predictions can be. But I don't like to predict where things are going to go. I have a devilish temptation. Oh, man. Hit me with a why. If you ever... fight with hostility towards the world as a whole. And you want fools to get their just desserts. You don't want to inflict them, but you want it to happen. Do you ever have that? You ever have that temptation? Ooh, it's tough, man. It's tough. I don't fight it. Maybe I shouldn't either. I don't know. But I'll get to that. So, what society looks like after AI takes most of the current jobs? So here's what happens in society, in the economy as a whole. People want what they have not earned, right? The desire for the unearned is the root of all evil. Whether it's unearned sex in the form of rape, whether it's unearned dominance in the form of assault, whether it's unearned property in the form of theft, whether it's unearned transfer of wealth in the form of fraud, the desire, the thirst for the unearned is woven in. It's an angel and a devil in human society, right? So I'm not coming to everyone's house and giving the speech. I'm using the internet. So I want things to be more efficient. That's great. That's the economy, man. When I was a kid, you used to have to get up and, well, when I was a little kid, there were like basically 2.5 stations in England, BBC One, boring except for documentaries, and twice a year they'd shut down the whole country because there'd be a Bond movie broadcast. BBC Two, weird, creepy, mastermind, someone shining a light in your face, Gestapo style, while barking questions at you and trying to get you pee yourself through your nipples. That was BBC Two. And ITV was like the city TV softcore corruption of the population as a whole. And we'd have this TVs. I remember watching, we'd watch Wimbledon when I was a kid. I love tennis. I always played tennis. I watched Wimbledon when I was a kid, and we'd watch it on a fairly ripply 12-inch black and white TV, where you basically had to roughly squint to see where the ball might be, could possibly be, maybe, because you got someone like Arthur Ashe or Bjorn Borg serving at approximately 5 light years per second. And it was, you couldn't see a thing. It was really just, it was like a Ouija board. Hey, where's the ball? Hey, I think, hey, the play's over. Someone's crying. I think we have some idea who won, but we used to watch it anyway. I've only watched tennis once live, but we used to have to get up and change the channel by hand, right? And I used to have fights with friends because I would be like, oh, I need to go from channel 13 to channel 6. And they'd be like, you're breaking it. It's like, no, I'm not. It's robust. Plus, trust me, the tube is going to go long before the crank. So the fact that we want to save time, save resources, wonderful. That's the efficiency thing. However, interwoven with that save time, save resources is you want to steal stuff. You want stuff that's unearned. And people want jobs that require thinking without actually having to think. People want resources without having to earn them. So they go to the government, they create HR departments, there's checkbox hiring, there's quotas. Like, people just want stuff without actually having to earn it in the free market. And that's really, really corrupt. So what's happened, of course, is that we have this unbelievable, swollen, tumor-esque Brad Pitt crybaby haircut that is swallowing the economy. I mean, if you look at the growth of school administrators versus teachers, if you look at the growth of hospital administrators versus actual doctors, I mean, if this giant, bloated, mushroom cloud managerial class that exists to screw people up, slow everything down, never respond to anyone, push paper back and forth, and eat the entire economy like a vampire thirsty for adrenochrome. And it's brutal. It's monstrous. It's hideous. And those are, you know, in terms of the Marxist terms, those are the bourgeoisie exploiting the working class. So you've got this whole managerial class. I mean, I worked for a government agency once when I was a temp and I was about 20. And man, it was eye-opening. A couple of men, mostly women, all just sitting around complaining about their husbands and saying, well, we need to get something done, so let's hire a consultant. So they'd hire people like me to come in and do work while they went back to talking about their kids and complaining about their husbands. It really was something. And they were paid a fortune, of course, right? So you've got this giant managerial class that is just eating up the entire economy top down, like this inverted pyramid of incompetence. And there's like 3 guys keeping the economy running and everyone else is just hanging off their back, Atlas Shrugged style, right? So you've created a massive market opportunity for something like AI to come in and just clean house. Just fire hose, just clean house. By the way, did you hear about these firefighting women in Banff, BC, in Canada? They're like, well, we want to show how we don't need no stinking men, so we're going to do a controlled burn, all manned by firefighting women and fire chief women. And they actually just had to withdraw and abandon it because it's now completely out of control. Because apparently feminist firefighting is not carbon friendly, not carbon neutral, very carbon positive in its own way. So you've got this massive, bloated, bureaucratic managerial class, which creates a... Why is there such a big market demand for something like artificial intelligence. Because this managerial class is killing the economy, and they're not managing anything, they're just interfering with everything and everyone. And I've worked in HR departments in the past, and oh man, there's a lot of long lunches. I actually remember going on a business trip when I worked in HR. I went on a business trip to Paris, France. Everybody just sitting around talking about how great diversity was, and all, and everybody went out for these long lunches and fabulous dinners and cruises on the Seine and stuff like that. I'm like, man, something's going to give. Something's going to give. You know, people actually need to make some stuff from time to time. They actually need to produce something other than PowerPoints and CO2. So, yeah, so all of the people who want the unearned, they want, you know, six-figure salaries without being innovative, creative, and subjecting themselves to the discipline of the marketplace and the challenges of building actual things. Like, if you've ever been in a job, and I'm sure most of you have, where you've actually had to produce real things in the world that work or don't, right? I've had tons of jobs. I had a job at a Pizza Hut when I was a teenager where they guaranteed that you'd get your drink and then your lunch within 5 minutes, and they put these timers on the table. Or it was free, or you got your next lunch free or whatever, right? That was brutal. Okay, you had to get their drink orders, get their drinks out, you had to get their food orders out within 5 minutes. The countdown was right there on the table, and you had 10 tables. I mean, it was mad. I had a paper route. You had to deliver the paper on time. I was a computer programmer. The code had to compile, work fast, and be accurate, and produce the desired results in accordance with the specification. So, yeah, if you've actually have to produce real things, and then there's this whole chatterbox Pac-Man eating up the dots of everyone else's income, managerial class, ChatGPT, the AI is just going to come in and eviscerate that. I mean, this is they're going to be like frozen ash statues from Pompeii. It's just going to come and eviscerate that. So in the same way that when you crank up minimum wage to cover up for how terrible, how absolutely appalling government education is, it teaches you nothing of value, has you hate knowledge and structure and facts and reason. And so you graduate with no economic value whatsoever, with negative economic value, because, man, I shouldn't have to work and bosses are all scum and right? Oh, great. Now let me hire somebody with no skills and a serious attitude about the value of what me as a job creator and provider has to bring to the table. I think I will pass. When you have to raise minimum wage because school sucks and producing unskilled, resentful people, well, you know, the first fully automated McDonald's has opened, I think, in the United States. Like, everything, soup to nuts, start to fin, end, is automated. It's like that old Steve Martin routine from the 70s or the early 80s. He's like, I have this belief that out back in McDonald's is just this one vat of stuff. And whenever you order something, they just scoop into that vat of stuff. You know? Want a Big Mac? Here you go. Want some fries? Here you go. Want some paper bag? Here you go. Here's your change. Remember this, the vat of stuff. Postmodernist McDonald's. So you crank up minimum wage, you create the demand for automation. You bribe everyone by passing rules, legislation, and requirements and thresholds for government funding that require demand, insist, force them to hire all the useless pear-shaped people in the known universe. Then you're just creating this giant demand for AI to come in and replace all those people. I mean, Twitter, they fired 80% of their people. They fired 80% of the people at Twitter. Elon Musk fired 80% of the people at Twitter. The site's working better now than it did before. New features coming out. All the unearned people are just going to, they're going to go into the wood chipper of AI. Do I care? I don't. Honestly, I really don't. It's like watching unjust prison guards getting fired. I'm good with that. And look, people need reality. Women need to go out without makeup and tight clothes. Men need to go out without flash and money. You just need to go out and see what you're worth as who you are without all of this enhancement and without all of, like, what are you actually worth in the marketplace? You know, if you have road workers, and let's assume it's some sort of private road creation program, you fire 80% of the workers, things are going to take five times as long because every worker is doing something. Can you imagine that you fire 80% of the workers and the company gets like five times more efficient? It's wild. Because, you know, there's in any big company, honestly, I'm not kidding about this. In any giant company, there's like 50 people who produce stuff and everyone else is just there to keep things out of their way, to support whatever they do and keep things out of their way. That's all there is. That's all there is. You know, in a running team, there's one guy who's going to win the medal and everyone else is just driving him to the mat, driving him to the meet, to the Olympics, and they're massaging his feet and they're getting him strange oils and they're laundering his clothes. Like there's one guy who's going to win and everyone else is just there to support. And I don't know why we've lost this whole idea. You know, in most movies, there's one star and he's the whole reason the movie's getting made and everyone else is just there to support him. Because if he's not there, the movie isn't going to get made, right? The people who can sort of magically open the movie, right? So having all this giant managerial class, everyone should be there to support the magic Price's Law productivity machines. This is the weird magic productivity machines. Everyone's just there to support them. And that's what the economy is. And now we've got this whole managerial class that's just getting in the way. And we've gone from meritocracy to checkboxes, and that simply can't last. All right. Do you think it's worth leaving a small city to get into a rural area if it means leaving a good community? I can't really answer that question for you because this is not a moral or philosophical question with a good or evil or right or wrong answer. If you have a choice, I mean, go for the best of both worlds, out of a city and into a good community. If you're going to make that leap, you might want to do it sooner rather than later because you don't want to try and join the good community in the country after the shit hits the fan, right? You want to do that sooner rather than later because otherwise they'll have closed up shop. All right. You briefly mentioned in your novel, The Present, the limited ability of daycare kids to bond once reaching adulthood. This is not one of the well-known red flags men are aware of when evaluating a potential mate. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. What you want to do when you're dating someone, you're going on dates, is you want to say, oh, tell me about your early childhood, blah, blah, blah. And if it was like, oh, I was in daycare. Oh, what was that like? Oh, it was great. You know, I was happy that my mom was at work and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, no bond. No bonding. I didn't even like my mom, and I cried when I went to boarding school, and I cried when I went to daycare, and I cried when I went to preschool and all that. So, yeah, it's... Now, if she said, well, I went to daycare, and it was rough, and, you know, I've really had a lot of issues with it, I've gone to therapy, and I've resolved things with my parents, fine. No harm, no foul. You don't blame people for what their parents did to them, but they are responsible for sorting it out, for getting to the truth about it and so on, right? All right, let's see here. Stefan, you said that most, quote, women aren't leftists, they don't know what they are. So why do you repeat and go along with leftist narratives instead of right-wing ones? Why do they go along with leftist narratives instead of right-wing ones? So hit me with the why. If you've heard this myth or this story that women who live together synchronize their periods end up synchronizing. Have you ever heard this story? Yes, you've heard it, right? Do you know it's completely false? Do you know that it's just not true at all? Yeah, so what happens is, let's say you've got a sorority, right? So in the sorority, there's the alpha bitch, so to speak, usually bitch, not always, but there's the alpha mean woman, the mean girl, and she's like, oh, my period cramps are just like killing me. It's just horrible, man. I can't do these period cramps. Horrible. As you sound like a squeaky hinge or the last half a second of every Britney Spears lyric. Not so innocent. So what happens is the alpha female says, oh, my period cramps are just awful. And everyone's like, oh, I'm having terrible period cramps as well. Oh, my God, they're just terrible, right? It's patriarchy. So they're lying. They're not on the same period cycle as the alpha female. They're just such conformists that they just go along with it. So, yeah, it's not true. It's not true. And again, there's lots of exceptions. Female intellectuals have had as big an effect on me as male intellectuals and male philosophers. So I you know, there's lots of exceptions, and lots of men are very much followers as well. But yes, that is. Sorry, I lost track. I had too many thoughts colliding in my brain. Let me just go back up to where I was. Dun, 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 dun. So yeah, so if you want to, if you, okay, boy, where do I start here? The state is a giant machinery for turning lies into profits and power. It's a giant machine. Normally, lies cost you. Like in the business world, if you lie, you lose your reputation and you can get sued, or I guess even charged, Elizabeth Holmes and Sunny Balwani style. So in the free market, you can lie for a little bit, but it generally catches up with you and there's negative consequences. The state, however, is a giant satanic machine for turning lies into profits and power. So why do people want to propagandize children? Because they can force the parents to pay for the indoctrination of their own children, teaching them often to hate their own parents. And yet I was accused of destroying families. So if you indoctrinate children, then you end up with massive amounts of money and power, right? If you look at sort of global warming, global cooling, environmental disasters of every kind, you sow seeds of lies and you grow infinite crops of power and profits. And profits is used in the very loosest sense, just resource transfer through force and debt, which is two sides of the same coin. So it's massively profitable to lie to children. Now, men as a whole tend to rate lower in trait agreeableness. And agreeableness, again, it's one of the, you don't want to be cantankerous and hate everyone. You don't want to just be a slave to everyone's whimsical opinion. So the trait agreeableness, which is one of the sort of five major personality traits, women score way higher on that. So if you can convince a group of females that X is bad, then they will almost automatically and instinctually, again, not all, but they will just enforce X. Right? So if you say being fat is not bad, being fat is fine, being fat is healthy, and so on, then anyone who says being fat is unhealthy will be attacked or criticized, ostracized, ejected, and so on, right? You program the women, they program the culture. Now, men then have a difficult choice, and I'm sure a lot of men in the audience here have faced this choice, and the difficult choice goes something like this. Well, I'd really like to settle down, have some kids, have a wife, have a family, but the women have been programmed to nag and to criticize without thinking, without reason, without evidence. The women have been programmed to become unpleasant and very often unappealing and very often overweight nag bots. They've been Karen'd long before their time, right? So what do I do? So if you program women, women will generally end up programming men, or at least having men suppress the things that the women don't like in order to gain sexual access and have kids and so on and all of that. So that's and I talk about this in the book. So you focus on programming women through the power of government schools, and then that changes society over time until it changes back. Until it changes back. All right. And if you look at, there are certain cultures that rate very high on empathy. And there are certain cultures that seem to rate very high on sociopathy. And so the sociopathy cultures will often target the empathy cultures and extract resources through the power of the state from the empathy cultures. Not because they themselves have empathy, but because they recognize that empathy is a giant red button that bang, 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 right? You can get resources from. I guess people may be looking for attention when dressing strange. Yeah. Everybody's looking for attention, right? I mean, I like having attention. I like having people listen to and watch what it is that I do. So it's not very undifferentiated. So, you know, the person who posted this, when you type something like this, it's totally fine. I mean, it's not a big criticism. I'm just giving you a way to sharpen and polish your intellect, right? Because you don't want to hold up a stick of butter and think you have some Elric-based Vorpal sword, right? So when you say, I guess people may be looking for attention when dressing strange, well, models look for attention, and at least until recently, models dressed very beautifully. And who doesn't want attention, right? Babies want attention. They don't dress strange. Dogs want attention, but they don't dress strange. So looking for attention, you just need to say, okay, but is it specific to dressing strange? Right, so, all right. Hey, Steph, how do I motivate a lazy wife? She spends a lot of time on Facebook. Well, my friend, let me ask you this. Is she a mother? Is she a mother? You can let me know. I'm going to go with no. She's not a mother. So, men can be lazy in their own ways, right? Men can be lazy with regards to video games and pornography are the two big curses for male laziness these days. Men can be lazy. Now, women can be lazy in their own way. And the way that women become lazy is they mother the world rather than become mothers themselves. Men can become lazy because they achieve imaginary things in unimportant digital worlds and don't actually go out and achieve anything in the real world. It's a fake achievement. Women, if they want something for nothing, if they want the feeling of mothering without the challenges of mothering, because, you know, actually becoming a mother, it's a lot of work. I mean, not so much the sex part, but, you know, pregnancy can be a lot of work, and having a baby, for the most part, is a lot of work. A baby's got to be up a couple of times a night. There's lots of breastfeeding, and breastfeeding is one of these things that, man, you just think, you know, latch on a breast and away it goes. But breastfeeding can be this massive, complicated, Olympic-level thing. I remember talking to a friend of mine's wife many years ago, and she's like, oh, my God, like I'm like literally 6 hours I'm sitting there trying to get this baby to breastfeed, and I'm completely hysterical at the end of it, right? Probably not helping the whole breastfeeding scenario. But it's a lot of work. You know, if you've been around babies, and I've, you know, been a stay-at-home dad for 14 and a half years now, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And it's a whole lot easier to nag, scold, and Karen people on Facebook than it is to actually raise a child. So it's a lot easier to say, I'm fulfilling my maternal instincts by having sympathy for X, Y, or Z group of people and defending them and attacking anyone who criticizes them. That's a great way for me to fulfill my maternal drives, my maternal desires, rather than, say, actually having a child of my own, right? And so the more that you can delay childhood in women, the more you can reshape and repurpose their maternal instincts towards usually leftist ends. So. Spends a lot of time on Facebook, yep. Women's thirst for attention and women's thirst to nurture and mother. Again, beautiful things in the absence of the state, in the presence of the state, they're used for corrupt. It's corrupting people. All right. Let's get to questions. Somebody says, I work for a major tech company, small percentage of people overwhelmed with work, with lots of useless people doing nothing or net negative utility. Need more layoffs. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It is the general way of things that all organizations accumulate useless people in the way that, you know, every now and then you got to scrape the barnacles off a ship, right? So yeah, all organizations gather not just useless people, but people who interfere with productivity. And again, a lot of this is mandated or bribed or whatever by the state. So yes. What is it? I saw someone post something. What's the most horrible truth you've ever learned as an adult? And the other is, good workers are punished with more work. Yeah. And this is something I learned earlier. There's two things I learned early on in business. Number one, if you want something done, give it to the guy who's busy. Don't give it to the guy who's not busy, because there's a reason he's not busy. He's not busy because he's not competent. Nobody wants to give him work. So yeah, if you want something done, give it to the busy guy. That's number one. And number two, a project manager tapped this once. He had a sign over his desk and he said, a failure to plan on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. Which I thought was very, very good stuff. All right. Somebody says, I've never worked a job where I wasn't required to provide some sort of value. All right. And please remember, of course, that you can tip on this platform. You can tip on this platform, just a little dollar sign there. And I'm telling you, I hate to sort of say I'm holding back, but it does give you a better show. I get very enthusiastic when I get some tips. And, you know, if when I was a waiter, if people came in who were good tippers and they were regulars, I would just chat with them. And it's just, you know, people respond to incentives. And I am, of course, a human being. So if you tip, then you get an even better show, which I think is good for philosophy as a whole. And again, I always try to put my very, very best into it, but there's a certain amount of that you get just with some tips. So if you would like to, you know, I've put probably 60,000 hours into philosophy. How can I distill and get things out so quickly? Well, massive amounts of experience. So, all right. While I'm waiting for the tsunami of tips to roll in, I have two thoughts, two rants. Just checking out the comments here. Oh, yeah, reparations. All right. So tell me, my friends, if you don't mind, tell me the thing you can't stand. The thing that there's something in life which, you know, this is the Winston Smith room 101, rats in the cage. What is it that you just can't stand? Did you lose all of your YouTube content when you were banned? No. God, no. I mean, it wasn't like I didn't see that coming, right? And if it wasn't then, it would have been post then. Homeless crackheads. Like, there's going to be something. Channel 4 News, stink bugs. Feminism, leftists, centipedes. Yeah, big spiders were a thing for me. I remember I had I borrowed a friend's camera to take pictures, and I was up on a cliff edge taking pictures of the sunset, and I saw a big spider on my hand, and I almost threw the camera over the cliff in response to this, right? So you've got something that you can't stand, right? I knew a woman who, like, anything to do with toilet jokes, just couldn't do it. Like, just couldn't do it. There's always something that is like chalks on a nails on a blackboard, just something with just, right? Recently, I can't stand drunks around me slurring their words. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The fan noise from my computer, I sometimes can't stand. Yeah, I finally got liquid cooled, and it makes a big difference. But yeah, it's a little touch and go. So there's a funny thing that's happened in the world over the last couple of decades, which is people think that being upset means nobody else should do it. If X makes you upset, you believe that no one should do it. I would not make a good surgeon. I just find it very tough. Oh, thank you very much for the tip. I appreciate that. Look at this. The show is going to immediately step up and get better. I'll rip a shirt off. Taking your shirt off for money. I believe that that's most of the internet at some point. Yoga pants. Yeah. So I would not make a good surgeon. Cutting into people, I feel it. I feel it very sort of vividly and strongly. Like I can't watch, you know, fail videos where some guy hits his nuts or scrapes his face. Like I feel it. I feel it myself. So I would not make a good surgeon. It provokes a revulsion or disgust or horror emotion within me. Now, I don't consider this a weakness at all. I mean, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. We're all kind of designed to be jigsaw pieces in society as a whole. So I fully accept and understand that I have revulsion or negative or, and you could say it's hysterical, but I have these responses to things, which means I shouldn't do them. It doesn't mean they shouldn't be done. I saw a video, I put it in one of my social media reviews things, and it was a guy working in a sewer, he had bugs crawling over the back of his neck. I couldn't. Now, I grew up, hit me with a why, if you grew up in apartments or flats with cockroaches. Did you ever grow up in apartments or flats with cockroaches? Oh, God. It's hideous. It's a hit. I remember very vividly I wanted to cook, and there were cockroaches crawling through, like, the clock on the stove. There were cockroaches crawling on the inside of the stove. Oh, God. They got into your cereal. Oh, isn't it horrible? Like, everything you touch, and it's I'm probably giving my own room 101 thing, but yeah, growing up with cockroaches is, did you grow up in a government-owned apartment building? I did. It was heavily rent-subsidized in the one that I grew up in. And I sort of hate to sort of point this out, but it was after a sort of wave of mass immigration that things got worse because just, you know, different standards from different cultures and so on, right? But, yeah, that was... So everyone has these things which are gross. Cockroaches scare TF out of me. Yeah. It's... You kind of got to be aware, and I don't know if you've heard these stories. I think it was in New York where cockroaches would crawl inside the ears of people, and then their antennae would wave on the ear hairs, causing them some unbelievably loud and horrible sounds in their ears, and oh, my God. I grew up in a house in the country next to a dairy farm. Cannot imagine the horror of cockroaches. Yeah, and it's funny because I don't particularly care about ants. I don't even mind if bees land on me. I'm a little cautious around wasps. They don't freak me out. Spiders for sure, and especially those big, long-legged, tiny-bodied ones. And I used to, when I was a kid, I used to freak out about dragonflies because I thought that their entire tail was a stinger. And now they don't bother me. But yeah, cockroaches just have this absolutely vile response. So I would not work in a job where you had to manage cockroaches. But on the other hand, I'm very glad that there are people who do it. I have a scar. I had the only surgery I've ever really had. It's the only time I've ever been under. Was to get something removed from my neck. And so I would not be great at cutting into people's necks, but I'm really, really glad that there are people who are good at that thing, at that kind of stuff, right? So, it's a funny thing where people's individual revulsion or horror or triggered or reactionary emotional elements means that nobody else should do it. Oh, somebody said I once woke up with an earwig crawling around my ear. That freaked me out. Yeah, I remember I went to Camp Bolton when I was a kid. I actually ended up being in a photo shoot there because it's a fairly good-looking kid. And I was at Camp Bolton, and we went camping, and I just remember the mosquitoes were insane. And we didn't have any bug spray. I remember the mosquitoes all over my legs. I remember you had to kind of zip up your whole sleeping bag to keep the mosquitoes out, but then you couldn't breathe. And oh yeah, I liked a lot of the camp stuff, but that was not one of them. Cockroach milk is a superfood. Oh, please. I'd be in there like one of these retching hairball cats, right? So the reason I'm talking about all of this is A, to plumb the depths of your horror reaction mechanisms, but also debate, facts. So here's what I see. When I see somebody who's clearly triggered, right? You point out statistical facts from unimpeachable sources, and people just, they freak out. This inappropriate, it's racist, it's sexist, it's phobic. And people use this phobe word, they say phobe. Phobe is a dominance word, because if they say you're ex-phobic, then you are in a situation of fear and trigger, which is a subservient position. Right? I'm not afraid of something, you are, right? I'm not nervous about this thing, you are. It's a dominance play, right? So whenever I see the word phobic, I just see it as a two-bit retarded dominance play. So here's the thing. When I see people triggered by facts, to me, it's the same thing as seeing people triggered by surgery. Oh, I can't watch surgery. Oh, okay, that's fine. So you won't be a surgeon. You're not good at surgery. You're too upset by surgery. I get that. So I've got a good idea. Hey, you know, if you really, really can't stand watching surgery, let people who can stand it do the surgery and you go off and do something else. I mean, isn't that the sensible thing to do? I don't like being around bugs, so I'm not an exterminator or a bug wrangler for the movies. I wasn't the key hairy-legged wrangler on arachnophobia. So to me, when I, and I've always sort of felt this way, and people get triggered, oh my God, this is so offensive, this is so upsetting. It's like, okay, so if debate, facts, reason, arguments, and evidence make you freak out, then you shouldn't do those things. It's not for you. I mean, cutting into another human being would freak me out, so it's not for me. But there's this weird thing where, can you imagine somebody saying, oh man, surgery is so upsetting, nobody should ever be a surgeon. Surgery has to be banned because I find it horribly upsetting. Somebody says, oh, dear husband hates moths. I don't understand it. They're just dizzy butterflies. Right. So when I see people, like, you put forward reason, arguments, and evidence, right? And people freak out. To me, it's like, okay, so you're in the wrong area. You shouldn't be trying to debate facts, reason, and evidence, because facts, reason, and evidence are like a spider dropped on your lap. So, I mean, I'm sure you've seen these videos, and it's usually girls or women, they're trying to deal with a mouse in the house, and they're putting the broom under the fridge, and then the mouse runs up the broom handle, and they all scream and freak out. And it's like, okay, well, you shouldn't be dealing with mice then. There are men, or sometimes men, mostly women. There are people who can go and handle the mice. The mice don't freak them out. I remember when I was a kid watching, I don't know, some Bond movie, and there was a big tarantula crawling up Sean Connery's extraordinarily hairy chest. I think that's where golf was invented. And I was like, okay, I don't think I'll ever be a movie star in a Bond movie, because I just really wouldn't want a big giant spider on my chest. I think he was freaked out by it too, but he did it. He was able to do it, right? So, and sometimes it's not even just a revulsion request. Sometimes it's just a, why on earth would you bother? So I remember when I was in theater school, I tried doing the miming of gathering wood and lighting a fire. I was trying a mime thing, right? Can you imagine me performing without my voice? Anyway, I tried doing a mime thing. And it turned out that the acting teacher had an extensive history with mime. And he said, you know, you're just kind of grabbing things randomly. With mime, you need to establish the various levels that everything is at. You know, something's low, this is 2 inches off the ground, this is 4 inches off the ground, and you have this whole thing. And every time you go back, you've got to remember the levels and go to the right levels, and you've got to really establish the physical space. And I was just like, oh my God. That would be my definition of a complete and total nightmare, waste of existence. You know, it's one thing to have imaginary friends. It's another thing to have 4-volume backstories and 3 middle names for each of them. It's one thing to create an imaginary space. It's quite another thing to rigidly remember every level. Now, maybe, you know, again, I don't get the mime thing. I just find it kind of annoying. Mimes are extraordinarily sonic boom punchable. But, I mean, some people like mime. Some people, they really get off on mime. I'm not a big fan of ballet. I certainly don't like modern dance. I love to dance myself, but just don't. I don't particularly like it. But I don't think it should be banned. I don't think it's morally wrong. It's just not my thing. So some stuff I have revulsion response to. Some stuff is just incomprehensibly boring stuff. Some stuff is just, I'm just not interested in. And that's personal to me. It's personal to me. And it's personal to everyone. And I don't think everyone should be the same, of course, and so on. But there's this funny thing where people who are really, really shitty at debating and get triggered by facts and overwhelmed by their emotions when they're in an intellectual discussion. And yet, they somehow think that because they are triggered, hysterical, and incompetent at something, that that something should be banned. That there's something wrong with that X. If you suck at Socratic reasoning, you're just overwhelmed by emotion, you can't handle it, you can't detach reason from hysteria, then you shouldn't be doing that stuff. You know, if you get so nervous as a surgeon that your hand shakes, I got an idea. Why not be a surgeon? Why not be involved in something where a handshake is the difference between life and death? You got to find something else. You know, I guess everyone tries singing along to the radio at some point, and if you are not good at singing along with the radio, then don't be a singer. I remember Sammy Hagar, he was singing along to the radio. People were like, wow, that sounds fantastic, right? So if you're just not good at something, don't do that something. But the idea that you would ban people who are good at it. Be like me saying, well, I think working with bugs is gross, so we're going to ban any exterminators. Exterminators are evil. Exterminators are bugophobes, something like that, right? Like, that's, isn't that a bizarre thing? I would be a terrible surgeon, so surgery should be banned. I would hate to work in a sewer, so all sewers should be banned. I wouldn't want to be a garbage man. I think it's gross. Therefore, all garbage pickups should be banned. Like, it's just completely bizarre. I suck at debating. I'm easily triggered by facts, reason, and evidence, and therefore hate speech laws. I mean, isn't that completely bizarre? I'm really, really bad at surgery, and therefore anybody who's a surgeon or talks about surgery should be banned for hate speech. It's like, no. Just because you're not good at something doesn't mean that other people should be banned from doing it. I mean, it's completely bizarre. It's completely bizarre. But that's where we are. What you're saying is so offensive. It's like, so you're confessing that you're bad at debating. If X, then Y. If Y, then Z. Well, that's really offensive and upsetting. So why are you here? Why? You know, if I'm want to take a class, Introduction to Surgery. Introduction to Surgery. Like, oh, God, touching people who are sick is vile, it's gross, it's disgusting. I can't imagine cutting into a goiter. Oh, what would people say? Oh, we're sorry, we'll shut the whole program down. I'm sorry that you're having a disgust response to surgery. We're going to pass anti-surgery laws so nobody can get a surgeon. And there's no such thing as surgery because it's upsetting to you. God, is it just me? Isn't this just completely bizarre and weird? Your argument is upsetting. It's inappropriate. It's offensive. It's like, so you're in the wrong place. You shouldn't be debating people because you can't handle your emotions. You have a hysterical triggered response. So you shouldn't be doing this. This is the wrong place for you. It's the wrong thing to do. Why would you want to do something that is really, really upsetting to you? And that's one thing, but why on earth would you want to ban everyone else from doing something that's essential and important that just, you know, not really enjoyable for you, that is really upsetting to you? I don't know. It's a strange thing. All right. Let's get to, how about a moth flying into your ear? Oh, yeah. Bugs in the ear. And everybody, like, I didn't have a car to my 30s, and I would bike everywhere. And every now and then, you're biking along, and you get a good old bug in the throat. It doesn't that, see, that doesn't bother me that much. It's just a, you know, it's just the price of, what was it? $6,000 a year to run a car in a city? It's like, okay. Would you take $6,000 a year to swallow a bug or two a year by accident? Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, this trigger thing, it's wild. The trigger is just a confession that you suck at something. You know, if I thought I was giving a speech in Carnegie Hall, it turns out I'm supposed to give a piano recital. Well, unless you want to hear a bad rendition of Chopsticks for 2 hours, I'm not really going to have much to offer. I'm going to feel kind of stressed and tense about it because I'm incompetent at piano. That clap thing people do when making a point is as repulsive as it gets. Yeah, that's a dangerous thing, and that's going to get someone seriously smacked, and it shouldn't happen, and it's wrong for it to happen, but it's going to. It's going to. Sorry, there was a question up here. The Neely thing from the subway, any interest in that? Do you care? This feels like kind of old Zimmerman hat to me, but if you're interested, you can hit me with a why. People were saying, why is it that people defend? I mean, this guy was, he had, what, 40 arrest warrants. He'd been arrested 40 times. He punched a 67-year-old woman. He tried to kidnap, drag her down the street, a 7-year-old girl. And he was on a warrant, out on arrest. And yeah, you are interested. You are interested. Yeah, so people are saying, well, why is it that everyone would defend this stuff, right? So a fear breeds compliance. So you want a population that's nervous. You want a population that's afraid. And the way that you do that is you keep violent people out of prison and you keep crazy people out of asylums. You put them out into the world as a whole. And that way, and then anybody who defends himself or herself against violence, you attack and prosecute them and try to destroy their lives. If you can't do it legally, then you will do it reputationally. So, you know, people who want to expand power over you want you in a constant state of nervousness, anxiety, fear. And the, so to weaponize both evil and mental illness, to have you trapped in enclosed environments with people who are crazy and violent, and who and if you defend yourself, you will be attacked and destroyed. And that is the way that you you grow power over people, right? So it's a standard totalitarian approach to just keep people scared. I mean, and if you can't get people scared enough with environmental disasters or COVID, you just you need to invent some new thing to keep people scared. And it's very the fear is by far the biggest motivator in human life. And we can understand evolutionarily speaking, it's why. Now, fear, of course, is supposed to be very short term, right? Fear is very short term. It's fight or flight. It's supposed to last a minute, maybe a couple of minutes. You either get away from the bear, or you beat back the bear. But it's not, you know, so the way that you grind people down as a population as a whole, well, first of all, you expose them to ugliness everywhere they turn, to ugly buildings and ugly cities and so on. Just and, of course, you know, homelessness and drug addicts and like everywhere. Just expose them to relentless ugliness and it breaks their spirit. But you put a situation in where you try to extend their fight or flight mechanism from a few minutes to like their whole life. If you spend your whole life enmeshed in this fight or flight mechanism, it's going to wear you down. And all of that. And then when you provoke this kind of anxiety in people, then you say, okay, if you obey, I'm going to remove this anxiety. And people are just so desperate for any kind of peace of mind that they'll just comply and obey. And it's standard stuff, right? I don't mean to be like, oh, it's just, you know, but this is why I really don't do politics. It's just, it's way too predictable and way too boring, right? You know, seeing all of the people who are breathlessly putting forward things that I was talking about like 8 or 9 years ago. You have to wait for the world to catch up. I mean, I think you have to wait for the world to catch up. If you don't wait for the world to catch up, then, well, the blowback can be very, very difficult and unpleasant. All right. Peter Boghossian said there was no reason to choke Neely to death. The other guy could have loosened the choke to let Neely breathe. Peter was talking as a Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner having been choked often. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know whether there was a reason to choke Neely to death or not. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't there. I haven't reviewed all the video, and this may be something for the courts to decide. But without a doubt, I mean, it's a failure. I mean, if you want a peaceful society, see, you know how we talk about Price's Law, which is that a vast minority of people are responsible for most of the productivity in the world, or a tiny minority of people are responsible for most of the productivity in the world. Like, if you've got a population of 1 million, 1,000 of them are producing half the value of the 1 million workers. You've got 1 million workers, 1,000 of those people are producing half the value, right? So, it's the same thing with crime. Cities could be made very safe and very livable in about a weekend. You just arrest and keep in jail. Like in New York, like 300 people commit the vast majority of the shoplifting. It's like 300 people. And it's the same thing in just about every major city, that if you look at its repeat offenders, heavily committed to crime, who commit the vast majority of those crimes. So you could make the city, I mean, we saw this with El Salvador, right? You can make the city safe and livable very quickly, but you'd have to put people in jail and you'd have to reestablish asylums. And they don't want the cities to be safe and livable because they want to expand their power, which means, you know, the government always The people who want power over you have to invent danger so that you run to them for protection. If you don't feel in danger and they say, we've got to save you, it's like, well, from what? From what? Let's see here. Steph, did you know that the I'm Glad My Mom Died book by Jeanette McCurdy depicts appalling sexual acts in detail done by Jeanette? Pretty gross stuff. Yes. And she also talks very frankly about how she used a blowjob to manipulate and control her boyfriend. And yeah, it's pretty nasty. I mean, she had a pretty rough upbringing, a pretty bad mom. I mean, the whole title, I'm Glad My Mom Died, it is just horrendous. Yeah, this is what defunding and prosecuting policing causes. Yeah, so, I mean, the defund and defund the police is a status signal, right? It's a status signal so that if you say we should defund the police, what you're saying is that you're wealthy enough to live in a gated community with private security. It's the poor people who suffer the most when police are defunded. In particular, the black population suffer enormously when the police are called racist and so on. What was it last year? 11 blacks died from police shootings. Like, that's it. And you compare this to particular black-on-black violence. I mean, the numbers aren't even close. So yeah, it's just a way of saying, well, I don't really have to worry about these things because I'm in a gated private community and I'm in a wealthy suburb and blah, 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 blah. So you can just talk about all of this stuff. It's a way of status signaling. It's really, really sad. All right. This the guy did a rear naked choke wrong, so instead of putting the guy to sleep, he suffocated him. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know enough about this stuff to comment on the details, but a guy with this level of violence in his history and an arrest warrant out and so on, I mean, obviously should have been in prison. I mean, obviously we much better want much more want people to have better childhoods and not grow up like this. But when people do grow up in this sort of manner, then I mean, you could say it's a systemic failure, but the system is no longer interested in succeeding, right? They will take the side of the criminal no matter how long a rap sheet. Well, sure, but they take the side of the criminal in order to punish people who fight back, right? This goes back to Bernie Getz. It was that in the 80s, wasn't it? Where he showed up in a Billy Joel song or something, right? So Bernie Getz defended himself against a bunch of teenagers in a subway, and he also was attacked. This is going on forever. It's not that they're pro-criminal specifically. It's just that they're anti-self-defense. Because if people are able to effectively defend themselves, then the criminal threat goes down. And they want the criminal threat to stay high so they can sell solutions and security to people who are constantly scared. So, somebody says, I got offered a job in San Francisco for $200,000 a year. I turned it down. Yeah, well, San Francisco used to be one of the greatest cities on the planet. As did Paris, by the way. Any other last tips, questions, comments on our glorious Sunday of philosophical clarity? Any other last tips or questions, comments, criticisms, anything you like? Or just wait. We've got maybe a slow typer or two on the planet. And I really do thank everyone for dropping by today. You can see under the video, you can join my locals community as well. And it's free to join. You can check that out. Any advice for a divorced father to help keep his kids from going down the wrong path? That's a tough call, man. That is a tough, tough call. So, yeah, 150% ownership. Resisting the urge to blame others for me for your troubles is the final hallmark of maturity. Resisting the urge to blame others for your troubles is, and I'm not talking about, you know, like tax increases or something, but you have to resist the urge to blame the wife. It's very tempting. It's very tempting, but you chose the wife. You chose the mother of your children. You chose to date her, get engaged, get married, give her children, stay with her. So, hundred percent ownership, 150% ownership, and the requisite apologies. which is I chose. I'm very glad that you guys are here, and I wouldn't have got to meet you if I didn't choose your mom. I chose a woman, and the marriage didn't work out. And either I did something wrong, or I either did something wrong, or I chose someone wrong. And choosing someone wrong is doing something wrong. But show them complete and utter and total self-ownership, and that will transfer self-ownership to them so they can avoid your mistakes in the future. Paris riots. I mean, the fact that the French are rioting over a two-year extension in Social Security benefits from 62 to 64 or something like that is one of the worst misallocations of outrage in the world that I can really imagine. Yeah, I'm not really doing racism as a topic. I did it for years, and I don't really have much to say on it. I mean, everything I've said in the past. So you can just do a search. FDRpodcasts.com is where to go. But I honestly, I mean, there are topics I just got so sick of. I guess it's like when I was in my teens, I went to my first bar and ordered, of course, my robust Coca-Colas. And there was a bar band playing, and somebody was like, "Do House of the Rising Sun." And they're like, no, I can't. I literally cannot play that song ever again. Because everybody wants to hear it, and I guess you get. Let's see here. Steph, has your viewership increased since 2022? I really don't know. I don't really track. I don't track those things as much. I really, really focus on trying to create as high a quality communication and as focused and valuable a communication as possible. I can't chase viewership. I obviously try to provide as much value as possible, but I don't really chase viewership in that way. I would love to do some travel and some documentaries this summer, but they are very expensive, and that I really have to defer to you. If you guys want me to go and do documentaries, you can donate for them. If you don't, then that's a different matter. So, because you know, I have to sort of be responsible to the income of the show, and as you know, I don't take any ads. And you know, frankly, if you've listened to this show, right? Let's do some quick calcs here, right? This is just not a nag thing. This is how to ascribe value, right? So let's say you've listened to 1,000 hours of my content, right? Which is really, 500 shows or maybe 400 call-in shows if they've gone over 2 hours, right? So if you listen to 1,000 hours of content, right? Now, normally, you could get 15 minutes of ads per hour. But let's be conservative. We'll say just 10 minutes of ads per hour, right? 10 minutes of ads per hour. So if you've listened to 1,000 hours, right, then I've saved you 10,000 minutes, right? 10,000 minutes. So let's do 10,000 divided by 60. That's 166.66 hours I've saved you by not having ads, right? So let's divide that by a 37.5 hour work week. So I've saved you almost 4.5 work weeks full time of ads. In other words, it's a month and a half worth of full time ads that I've saved you if you've listened to 1,000 hours. I have given you back 6 weeks full time of your life by not having ads. Plus, of course, if I'm in the middle of talking about something really important and there are ads, it's going to interfere with that, and it's, and also I've been able to speak more truth because I don't have ads, because otherwise I would have been targeted, the advertisers would have been targeted, and so on. So, if you've listened to 1,000 hours of content, right, I've saved you 6 weeks of full-time work worth of ads. So what's that worth to you, right? What's that worth to you? Now, even if we value your time at $1 an hour, right, then that's $166 worth of value that I provided if you've listened to 1,000 hours. Even if we just say, would you be paid $1 an hour to listen to ads, right? So it's when something's not there, it can be hard to see the value. If I put ads in and there were 10 minutes worth of ads every hour, And even if you say, well, it's only 5 minutes worth of ads every hour. Okay, then instead of a month and a half, I've saved you 3 weeks of full time, right? So that is a massive amount of value that I've provided to you by not having ads. I've given you back 6 weeks of your life. 6 weeks of your life. And what's that worth to you? I think that's a good value proposition. It's a good value proposition. I was also giving you 10 free books and 3 free documentaries, one of which is over 4 hours long, Sunset in the Golden State, The Truth About California. And you've also gotten a community out of it. People have gotten friendships and they chat with each other, and we've gotten some marriage out of it. I've saved some marriages. I've helped improve millions of children's parenting around the world so that we end up with a more peaceful world as a whole. I mean, the value that I provide is no question, no doubt for me. So that is the question. What is the value that I provide to you, and will you support it? Or are you a little bit of an exploiter? In other words, the show can't survive without people donating. And if you are relying on everyone else to donate, where's your integrity? Where's your integrity? Isn't it something that you should do based on the value that I'm providing? So just sort of putting that case or that point out there, that I have put myself out there right to the edge of survival. I have faced down bomb threats and death threats and tear gas and all this kind of stuff. What is the value, right? I burned my whole reputation to the ground to get the truth out there that the world is slowly catching up to. What's that? What's that worth to you? I don't have any regrets. It's not like you got to pay me. It wasn't a big sacrifice. These are choices that I made, but there was a lot of risk involved, and is still involved in what I do. So what's that worth to you? I hope it's worth something. Sorry, no tips, Steph. We support monthly on 2 platforms. Listen, that's super kind. And you don't have to apologize for not tipping me here if you're supporting me elsewhere. Look, if you're broke, if you're totally broke, enjoy. Hopefully you can use this to make some money. Enjoy. Don't feel a single shred of guilt. But come on. I mean, if you have a little bit of money, $5 a month, $10 a month, come on. I mean, a drink at Starbucks is like, what, $8 these days? So. All right, let's just see here. What sort of job skills do you think would be useful in this changing world of ours? I work as a welder, fitter in a factory at the moment. It pays well, but I want more. Started an essential writing course. Again, I think philosophy and reasoning is really good. If you're good at reasoning and debating and arguing, I was talking to a friend of my daughter's the other day, just saying, like, if you can learn how to be comfortable talking to the public, whether it's online or in person, you have a superpower. Like, public speaking is fantastic. So the highest IQs in education are in the physics department, and the second highest are in the philosophy department. So if you're good at reasoning, good at debating, good at talking to people, really the world is your oyster. You don't have much to fear in social situations, and there's a confidence that comes out of you when you have those skills. So whether it's Toastmasters or just, talk to a webcam and publish it and get feedback and so on, being able to think, being able to reason is just going to make you valuable just about anywhere. And so I think focusing on philosophy is great. Also, you can find me at subscribestar.com/freedomain. Subscribestar.com/freedomain. Do you see relationships as only transactional? What about covenants versus contracts? No. Relationships between mother and child, father and child, that's not transactional. Relationships between adults, yeah, they're transactional. You have to provide value, you have to receive value. Otherwise, you're being exploited or exploiting someone else. So, no, I mean, not all mother-child relationship, mother-baby relationship, not transactional. You don't ask the card to swipe your cleavage to get with a debit card or you don't ask them to swipe your cleavage to get boob milk, right? So. Best thing I could do with a time machine is send your books to my parents instead of Dr. Spock's. Somebody says he's worth more than a Netflix subscription. Glad to use what I have to support. Somebody else says local subscription is so worth it. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you so much. But children bring great joy and fulfillment. Yes, they do, for sure. But it's not transactional in the way that adults are, right? Children don't have to work to give you joy and fulfillment. right? They don't have to be babies don't have to be virtuous to bring you joy and fulfillment. That's a celebration of life itself. So they don't have to do anything. They only have to be. Whereas with adults, you have to do things, right? You have to do things. I mean, there's a funny thing that's going on in the world these days, which is women with all these standards. And here's what the man has to bring. He's got to be tall. He's got to be good looking. He's got to be a good income earner. He's got to have a six pack and blah, 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 right? And then the man says, well, what do you bring to the table? Me. It's like, oh, man. Oh, man. The way to make women extraordinarily unappealing is to make them think they have value just for existing. And that way they just exploit their way through life. Well, they exploit their way till their early 40s, and then they get ignored and bitter and become Karens, right? I mean, for women in particular, a healthy relationship with a good sexual relationship with a man is essential for happiness, because the human semen contains antidepressants for women. You say, well, why is women's antidepressant use so high post 40? It's like, well, a lot of times they rode the carousel in their 20s, they got bitter in their 30s, they're alone in their 40s and 50s, and they're lacking whatever joy juice is in male semen, and they then have to go to substitutes, which I don't really think work. Let's see here. Locals is great. Yes, you can see the link below. What's your opinion on Naomi Wolf's work? Well, I didn't like The Beauty Myth, and I think she's made some significant errors in her work, but the work that she's doing on analyzing the Pfizer data, particularly with regards to pregnancy and childbearing, you can really see the beauty of her spirit, if not her soul itself, come out in the glorious work that she's doing to reveal some of the facts about the data in the mRNA tests. That is really, really something. And I won't say all is forgiven, but it is a beautiful thing to see what is happening with her in her passion. I mean, the incredibly deep and joyous passion she brings towards threats, towards fertility, you know, childbirth and raising children, one of the greatest joys in the world. And you can see her just glow with this stuff, with that unbelievably thick Kirstie Alley hair. But seeing the beauty of her spirit expressed in this way and the passion of her drive to get essential information out there is really quite inspiring and a beautiful thing as well. All right. I saw a video, a woman wants men to be a sugar daddy before she'll date him. Yeah. I mean, that's just sex work, right? That's sex for resources. Right. And it's supposed to be children for resources, right? I will help continue a man's line, provide my own half-genetic material. I will help continue a man's line. And for that, he goes to work. I mean, going to work to just make money for yourself is like trying to masturbate yourself into a family lineage continuation scenario, right? And so the woman, it's not just me. It's not just sex. Women enjoy sex as much as men. And if you read descriptions that women give of the experience of orgasm and you read men's description of the experience of orgasm, it's the same. Like you can't tell the difference if you take the gender off these descriptions. So women enjoy sex, women enjoy orgasms as much as men do. So the idea that men then have to also provide money and all the woman has to do is provide sexual access, it's just selling your body. And it's different, like if you take a woman on a date and you pay for the date as a guy because she's somewhat traditional, you're somewhat traditional, that's not the same thing because you're not paying for sex. You're showing resources in order to interest her into, right? Dating a woman is like hiring, it's a job interview. It's hiring her to be the mother of your children and the shepherd of your lineage. And your lineage is not just biological, it's philosophical, it's moral, it's existential, it's like all of the things, all the values and so on that your ancestors struggled to gather together. So you're interviewing her. And when I was taken out on job interviews, if I was taken out for lunch for an interview, I wouldn't pay for lunch. The person interviewing would pay for lunch. So I understand all of that. But the idea that a woman should get paid for something she enjoys as much as a man, it's just wild. Like what an unbelievable and appalling thing to try to get across. Like, I mean, what a ridiculous scam. What an unbelievably ridiculous scam. Just crazy. All right. I've made my case for tips, so you either will or you won't, depending on your own level of integrity. So I'll just wait for any last tips or questions to show up, and we'll close down soon, but I really appreciate everyone dropping by today. And again, if this is your first time, don't worry about donating or anything like that. Just enjoy and engage. And let's see here. Some men view women as socially acceptable blow-up doll sperm receptacles, which is ultimately self-centered on the man's part. Some that's all they're worth. Well, it's funny how men complain about feminism and then exploit women. It's like, well, you're just creating more feminists, right? You pump and dump, you're just creating more feminists, more bitterness, more anger. Anything that you do that provokes resentment on the part of women towards men is just undoing your own civilization. So, loving these Rumble live streams, locals, subscriber, and a year of value. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate it. And again, go to freedomain.locals.com. If you enter a promo code, all caps, UPB 2022, you get a free month to try it out. How come I sometimes see wholesome, clean-cut looking girls with tatted-up steroid guys? Are they damaged inside? Yeah, so the opposite of family is fetish, right? The opposite of family is fetish. Sexuality is supposed to pair bond people into providing a stable platform in which to raise and nurture children, right? So that's the purpose of sex. And it's beautiful and wonderful in that context, an amazing part of life and a central part of why we're all here. So the purpose of sex is to bind people together in a loving relationship, to fill them full of joy and pleasure with each other's presence and so on, and to have a playground of intimacy and all this beautiful thing. A fetish is when you reduce sexuality to a single, highly exaggerated body part, right? So, I mean, there's things in this realm that I am frightened to understand. Honestly, there's things in the realm of what goes on in human, quote, sexuality that I'm just really, really nervous about trying to understand. Like, what is it with feet pictures? Like, I do not understand why there's these, I've seen these women being interviewed as like, oh yeah, I made $20,000 last month selling feet pics. It's like, what kind of freaky, grape-stomping, bizarre fetish is going on there? And you know, you can see it with boobs or butts or whatever, and that's a little different because they're sort of symbols of fertility and so on. But yeah, just this a fetish is when you hijack sexuality and use it for personal gratification absent any pursuit of pair bonding and family. And of course, you know, society as a whole has an interest in provoking fetishes rather than pair bonding, but I would assume that the sort of clean-cut girls with tatted up steroid guys, that they have a fetish for extraordinarily large men. Now, I would assume that a woman who has a fetish for an extraordinarily large man had sexual imprinting in the form of childhood sexual abuse. And then, of course, if it was an adult, it would be much larger. So then she would grow up with her sexuality programmed to respond to as an unfortunate byproduct of the sexual abuse she experienced by being a little girl with a much larger man, that she would then have a sexual fetish to do with much larger men, which would be a tragic byproduct of sexual abuse as a child. That would be my guess. Of course, I can't prove that with every instance, but that would be my guess. God's instructions to men are to love their wives, indicating there's more to the sexually intimate relationship than the physical transaction of sex. Yeah, of course. Of course. All right. I am supporting you on Subscribestar and Locals. Would you rather have me shift all resources in one platform only to cut the overhead? Yes, I mean, that's certainly better, but, you know, whatever is most comfortable for you is fine. Why did you jump on the Trump wagon, genius? I could easily play tone police and just say I'm not going to respond to such a soy beta, passive-aggressive, girly question. It's an insult to girls. So why did you jump on the Trump wagon? Well, I mean, so not me, but those people who had an influence on getting Trump elected probably saved 500,000 people's lives. And if you're at all into fetuses not getting killed, then Roe v. Wade banning comes out. The repeal of Roe v. Wade comes out of Trump's appointment of people to the Supreme Court. So, you know, over time, saved millions of people's lives. You know, I could see a case. I could see a case for people doing that. I really could. Maybe you can't. Maybe other people's lives are expendable to you in that way. But I could see a case for that. All right. Well, the same that they reduce me to a wallet. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. But no woman can reduce you to a wallet. You just reduce yourself to a wallet. In other words, if you're having trouble attracting women and then you want to spend money instead, then you're just taking the cheap way out. I mean, obviously it's expensive in terms of cost, but you're saying, okay, so women don't find me particularly attractive, so I'll just spend money on them. Okay, but that's like a woman saying, men don't really find me, my personality attractive, so I'll just push my boobs up on a shelf and wear a short skirt, and that way I'll, right? So you're just taking the easy way. I'll spend money rather than become a better, more moral, more pleasant, more positive, more funny, better conversationalist. Like, whatever's going to be attractive to a woman in terms of quality, you just go spend money. You'd rather spend money than become a better person? That's pathetic. Like, I'm sorry, I mean this with all affection and all of that, but if you're going to just spend money rather than become a better person, you get what you deserve. All right. My fetish is wide hips. I die when I see them. Well, maybe that's a bit of a fertility signal and so on, right? But a fetish is a dangerous thing to mess with, because then a fetish is designed to overwhelm low qualities of character, right? So if you have a fetish for wide hips, there's going to be some girl with super wide hips, and she's not going to have to be a nice person, because your fetish is a way of pole vaulting over the sort of flaming crocodile trench of her low quality personality and attaching to a particular physical object, a physical characteristic of hers. So a fetish is very dangerous, and fetishes are generally provoked by having low quality people around you when you were younger. And the fetish could just be physical beauty or whatever, right? But it's a way of just stepping over trashy personalities to get what you want from a programmed standpoint. Thoughts on ESG and CBDCs? Again, like I don't think you're new, so I don't know. I don't like government mandates, and central bank digital currencies are complete enslavement of the human race, probably in perpetuity. So I hope that people will follow Ron DeSantis' lead in Florida and ban them from their environment. So, let's see here. Being real and presenting yourself in honesty while rejection might happen does take courage. Yeah, be yourself and be honest, and then people aren't rejecting you. They're rejecting authenticity and honesty, which is a good thing, right? Are you still working on the podcast of trolls, Psychology of Trolls? You think I know. Thank you for the reminder, though. I will make a note of that. I think that may have got lost in the shuffle, but I appreciate that. I have actually recorded an introduction to artificial intelligence, or the truth about artificial intelligence. It's going to be the first of a two-part series. The first is the history and philosophy of it. The second is going to be the details of what's happening at the moment. So you can look for that over the next day or two, and I hope that you will check that out and find that to be of value. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. I appreciate you dropping by today. A great, great conversation. If you're listening to this later, please help out the show, freedomain.com/donate. I would really, really appreciate that, and very much do need it as well. So thank you for that. Remember, if you've listened for 100 hours, I have saved dozens and dozens. If you've listened for 100 hours, I've saved 10 hours of your life by not having ads, and I hope that you will find that value. So did you change your mind on AI? You previously said it doesn't or can't exist. Well, I just recorded a presentation, so how about I don't summarize an hour and a half long presentation right now, but you watch the presentation, you lazy person. All right. Thank you very much. Have yourself a wonderful afternoon. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.